Hello and welcome to episode number 26 of the At You Two podcast. This is our Ode to Adam episode. You'll hear about why in a few minutes. But before we get to that, I just want to thank you for tuning in live. If you are, goodstuff.fm/live. And want to thank the full slate of guests that we've got on the show. First of all, we'll go in. I think this is alphabetical. Yeah, Becky. Welcome to the show, Becky.
Thank you.
Great to have you back on. And fellow retainer of the name Chris or Christopher, Mr. OMG, welcome back to the show.
Hello, hello. Good to be here.
And Matt.
I am just wondering, how does Endrinol come after Myers alphabetically?
I was first name.
First name. Okay, there we go. Then, yeah. Okay. We're on the same page now. Hi, Chris. Hi, Becky. Hi, Chris.
Hello.
Hey, Matt. Good to see you.
Good to see you guys.
So we're back recording live. For folks who aren't aware, these days right now we're on a sort of bi-weekly schedule, recording every 2 weeks. I've got some new gear that I'm recording with, so hopefully everything works and we get a show out of this. There's no soundboard this week, so soundboard fans, unfortunately, you won't be interrupted. Matt's opted to be the official soundboard app, I guess, of this episode. So do you have a soundboard you want to copy for us this time, Matt?
What do rock stars smell like? That was okay, wasn't it? Not bad? That was actually probably really, really bad.
Yeah, nobody tell them. We'll just move on.
Yeah, don't tell me how bad it was, because that would be really, really rude.
Which is disappointing. So it's, like we said, this is going to be the Adam episode. His birthday was recently on the March 13th. And so we will be discussing, in the roundtable, we'll be discussing all things Adam, except for that. But before we get to that, we will be answering some of the questions that folks have sent in to the Ask At You Two hashtag that we send out on Twitter. And we have some that came in over the last couple of weeks since last we recorded. At Febotini asked or mentioned, everybody was worried with Larry. We were all calling for him in social media, and he finally posted a gorgeous photo. Do you think you two that he attended answered, I'm guessing, fans' request? Did he post on purpose because of us? I believe so. It shows how sweet and lovely he is. So, Matt, what do you think? Is he responding to the social media pressure of where in the world was Larry?
Yeah, I actually think yes, he was. What he did, I think that was done on purpose, and you won't be surprised to learn why I think that. It's because our very own Sherry Lawrence, who knows no limits in what she is willing to ask U2's PR people, actually sent them an email saying, is Larry okay? There's been all sorts of Instagram posts and tweets and all that sort of stuff with photos of everybody but Larry, and fans are wondering where Larry is. And sure enough, 2 or 3 days later, there is a photo of Larry on Instagram. So, yeah, I would not be surprised at all if they said, "Oh, yeah, we haven't had Larry say anything on social media lately." So, yes, I think he did. I think he did respond to the fans' request and wondering where he is.
How about you, Becky? Is that a good enough Larry appearance? Is that?
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, I think he'd like to drop out if it were up to him and, you know, go do his thing. But they set a precedent, you know, putting these guys out on their Twitter and Instagram accounts and Facebook. And it was a lot of fun. And they were finally engaging the fans in a way that everybody wants to be engaged by them. And so it was his absence was noticed. And so I think there was a bit of an obligation for him to resurface. And no, it's not good enough. We always want more of Larry. Sorry. It's just that's how it goes. You know.
I don't know if we can figure out from the picture where he actually is in the world. I mean, it looks obviously island-esque, yeah. Somewhere warm.
It said home. Didn't it say hometown or something like that?
Well, he said hometown boy, hashtag original. But
it did, but I thought I... somebody saying that, I want hope that it was somewhere else, you know, but I don't know. Looked like it might be.
It's hard to tell.
Yeah. And then a fun sort of game, Photoshop game popped out of that, because the photo I sort of jumped on it. I know some other people did too. That photo kind of looked kind of high contrast and easy to sort of pull the background out. And right. And so then we started the game of, you know, actually putting Larry in. Somebody put him in front of the Joshua tree and et cetera. I put him driving right. in our family around in Mexico. And yeah,
I put him in front of the, I put him in front of the Tri-City Hoedown Center, which is a fine establishment here in Tri-Cities, Washington. So,
oh,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah. Why not?
I'm just, I'm looking at that tweet where he, with his photo, and it has 1,304 likes. I've been on Twitter since 2008. I don't think I have 1,300 likes collectively in 8 years.
Yeah, it'd be, I'm sure they, I'm sure some social media intern at the U2 headquarters, the U2 headquarters, not at U2 headquarters, but U2 headquarters has a spreadsheet with, you know, who gets more likes and has to report into the band.
Oh, sure.
Like Adam's birthday photo cake got 1,800 likes. So,
oh my God, that was the best. Yeah.
Yeah. So there you go. Yeah. Not Mason Merritt asked, what earlier U2 album are you most expecting Songs of Innocence to sound, or Songs of Experience, sorry, to sound like, assuming that's the name? I think it'll be a more rock heavy version of Zooropa, which is kind of an interesting thing to sort of compare it to. It's, you know, U2 often sort of does things in sets. And so this could be, you know, part two maybe of this set. So it's, what is it going to sound like? What is it going to feel like? What is it going to smell like? Anybody rescue me from my soundboard loop?
I think it's going to sound kind of like a cross between Octung Baby and Joshua Tree, I think. Because Innocence was focused more on the punk side. And the themes lyrically were, you know, childhood and growing up, and Songs of Experience, I think, is going to be where they really took it to the next level. So that's, yeah, I think a Zooropa-esque type album.
Yeah. Which is exciting. I think, I hope it's a little bit experimental. Is that, did you take that away from Zooropa too? Like the, you know?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I've listened to that album a lot lately. And it's, oh yeah. So different, you know. It truly reflects what they were doing, that they recorded it in the middle of a tour. I think it perfectly captured what was going on with the band at the time.
Yeah. Yeah. That's always, yeah. It'd be so interesting, as we've talked about on this podcast many times, to be a fly on the wall, no pun intended, of, you know, the band as they're recording the album or mastering it or wherever, whatever stage they're at with yeah. the album. And to see the decisions that are being made about how it's going to sound and stuff. So,
I would die if I ever had that opportunity.
Oh my God, I would. Oh my God.
Oh, he just said it.
Yep.
Yep. It would be very cool just to, you know, observe that.
Mm-hmm.
We'd all sit in the corner just going, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. Oh my God.
Yeah. Rocking back and forth.
Pretty much.
So if anybody from U2's team is listening and wants to, you know, have a podcast crew, you know, a live podcast from U2 studio, we'd be happy to
the studio.
We would be happy to oblige.
Yeah.
That's right. We
that would be the day that would be the day that Skype goes offline and Microsoft struggles to fix it for yeah. 24 hours.
Exactly. All right. Marty 1199 asked, do you think similarities between Gimme Shelter and which Rolling Stones and This Is Where You Can Reach Me Now is the reason U2 doesn't play it live? I don't know. I can hear some of the audio similarities, but I don't think that that's a real reason why they wouldn't have played it live.
That's a fascinating question. Yeah, I never even made a connection between those songs.
Yeah, I didn't either, but I still wouldn't think that that's the reason that they wouldn't play. Frankly, I don't know why they're not playing This Is Where You Can Reach Me Now. I think it's a great song. And it's appropriate that we're talking about that song, because I think that song belongs to Adam. That song is all about the bass line.
Mm. Nice, yeah.
I'll have to listen to those two. I'd never... I love Gimme Shelter. It's one of my favorite songs. I just it never, when I listen to either one, makes me think of the other. So I'm
yeah, I'd have to go back and go side by side. I can see some sort of like tonal similarities there, the sort of callback response kind of stuff, but Yeah, I don't think that would hold them back, because they have other songs that you could argue. I can't think of one off the top of my head right now that sounds similar to other, you know, band songs that right. if they were really sort of worried that way, they don't, U2 doesn't, I'm sure in the studio they'll, you know, they've tried something and then everybody would be like, no, that sounds too much like whatever, you know,
right.
Guns N' Roses or some other band.
That would be weird.
Yeah, that would be weird.
I don't know why that band popped in my head. Anyways,
this next question is from.
Yeah, I know. I'm trying to parse this, but it says at U2com Sherry. Sure. Anyways, she asks, Adam has many nicknames. Which one is your favorite and why?
Good Lord.
What are I'm not aware of many of Adam's nicknames. We should have maybe had a follow up with this.
She should have included them in the tweet.
Right.
Let's see if we can find them.
Sparky. Isn't Sparky one of them?
No, is it? I don't know.
I like doing this to Sherry because right now she's just, if she's listening live or when she listens later, she gets to bang her head against the desk or whatever. And it's like,
about you idiots. How much the rest of us don't know.
You're on the Adam episode and you don't know.
Okay.
Chat room says Jazzman. Yeah.
Yeah. People in the chat room, we need Adam's nicknames. Jazzman, Fabiano and Jeff, U2GW say Jazzman. That's right. Yeah. I think Sparky is one. Hold on. You know what? There is this website you can go to called Google.
Yeah.
Adam Clayton nicknames.
Nothing's coming up. For me,
there's nothing. All right, we need to create an article called Adam Clayton Nicknames so that we can rank number one because SEO.
Yeah, the first Google image search result for Adam Clayton Nicknames is how Bono got his name. So once again, Bono steals the show for.
He's always doing that, isn't he?
Good Lord, always.
Okay, so maybe we'll tune in next time Sherry's on. I'm sure we'll hear back. She'll probably have some follow up for us.
Right. Oh wait, his internet movie database page lists nicknames as Sparky and Madam Clayton. What?
Well, Madam. Think about the city.
Yeah, maybe from the Octung Baby stuff where they dressed in drag.
Yeah,
all right.
Now there is actually a Mrs. Clayton, so I don't know if they. Yeah. Anyway,
Madam Clayton's good. I didn't know that. That's clever.
At RVH95 asks, please address: is St. Patrick's Day a special day for U2 fans? If not, why have we not claimed this one yet? Matt, how about you've got a kind of Irishy sounding name?
So it is.
Do you have any insight?
Yes, it's. Is it special for U2 fans? I don't know. It's special for me because I'm Irish I think it gets associated with U2 because they're Irish. But when I think, if you were to like say, you know, what is a holiday that you associate with U2, I would put New Year's Day ahead just because of the song. Right.
Agreed.
And so whenever New Year's Day comes around, I immediately, you know, start the year out by playing that song. Whereas I don't do anything special U2 related on March 17th, but yeah.
Which is tomorrow as we record, but how about
Which
you?
Just tomorrow as we're...
Becky, are you doing any sort of U2, do you have a U2-related St. Patrick's Day tradition?
Normally, if I think about it, I'll post some pictures, you know, on my social media channels and say, hey, that favorite Irish band, and drive my friends crazy with it. So I'll do that, but sometimes I'll think about it, but I don't really do anything special. I think
it would be, I mean, it could be something, I guess, you know, one of those social media things that people could if that's maybe what RVH95 is inquiring or putting forth, that maybe we should try and make a day for U2 fans as well. But generally by the time most people are caring about the fact that it's St. Patrick's Day, they have a fair amount of alcohol in them and probably don't even recognize what band is playing for that matter. Not stereotyping Irish people. I'm stereotyping North American folks who celebrate St. Patrick's Day. It has nothing to do with Ireland in that sense. But yes, I digress before I keep moving. So for the roundtable today for this episode, before we move on, just in case you aren't familiar, if you want to send in questions, comments, stuff for the show. If you use hashtag AskAtU2 on Twitter, we'll collect those in a secret document and use that on future episodes of the show. So you just tweet out whatever you a thought or two, and you can chain them together if you want, and to multiple tweets if you want, and use hashtag AskAtU2, and we'll discuss it on a future episode. So, but yeah, for the roundtable, we thought we'd discuss all things Adam, Mr. Clayton, who was born March 13th, 1960. I'm just going to read the Wikipedia entry almost verbatim here, and then we will go into discussion. We have lots of comments from listeners, and then, of course, our distinguished panel on this episode will share some Clayton thoughts, as it were. But Adam Charles Clayton is an English-born Irish musician, best known as the bass guitarist of the Irish rock band U2. You may be familiar with that band. He has resided in County Dublin since the time his family moved to Malahide when he was 5 years old in 1965. Clayton is well known for his bass playing on songs such as Gloria, New Year's Day, Bullet the Blue Sky, With or Without You, Mysterious Ways, Get on Your Boots, and Magnificent. Yeah. You can sort of tell when the Wikipedia entry was last updated. And he has worked on several solo projects throughout his career, such as his work with fellow band member Larry Mullen Jr. on the theme of 1996's Mission Impossible. Clayton, as part of U2, has won 22 Grammys. So, yeah, I don't know if we have any Wikipedia.
So I want to start the roundtable. I want to start the roundtable by asking Becky, because just so people that are listening understand, we start planning the podcast usually, you know, 2 or 3 days in advance. And so we'll send out an email saying, all right, this is when we're planning to record, and here's what we're planning to talk about, and who's available. And when we mentioned that this week we were going to talk about that it was going to be dedicated to Adam, you could like see Becky jumping through the email to get on this episode. So Becky, what is going on with you and Adam?
Hey, well, if y'all haven't figured it out by now, Adam's my he's the guy I like, you know. He's first off, I love the bass, and I think it's like any time I listen to their songs, you know, that bass line, even though it may not be obvious sometimes, it just always comes through and it just speaks to me. And plus, he's just so distinguished. I think I love the way that he's aged. And, you know, when he showed his abs on that tour, come on, let's get real. The guy's, what is he, 56? I wish, yeah, I'd been at that show. Okay, sorry, but I was not. He's kind of competing with Larry's unbuttoned shirts there. But he's just always been cool. He's got this coolness factor. And, you know, you guys were there at the party. And I don't know if I should bring this up because maybe nobody else remembers what a goof I was when he walked by. And I did the most idiotic thing a fangirl can do. And I told him that to him. I love you, Adam.
Oh my God.
I love you, man. And it's like, you know, that was could have been one of us, just so you know, because I wasn't the only one saying it, I'm sure. I heard a lot of people saying, we love you guys. And, you know, Matt.
My jaw was on the ground. I couldn't speak. I was unable to form words. So I did not say, I love you, Adam, or I love you, Edge, or I love you guys, or anything like that. I was unable to form words at that point.
I'm pretty sure I took care of it for all of us, and I'll take the embarrassment hit because it was totally worth it. And the last piece of that is when we knew they were there and Adam was the last one on the stage, I was up in that perch. I almost killed myself running down the stairs, and I was trying to get to his side. We were on his side, but remember that little area that goes to the stage? Basically, yeah. Security people said, no. And so then I went around to, you know, there was that pillar there, that column. And let me tell you, I shoved my way in there, and I was like, I'm getting close to Adam. And I couldn't quite make the front, but I was about one or two back because I'm short, so people were pretty nice and let me kind of get as close as I could. But I don't know, I've just always had a thing for Adam. And you know, I'm one that I buy pictures of when the photographer's off, and I just think he's totally cool, and I love his sense of art, and I love what he's posting too. That's the social media is great. And, you know, I think he's hot.
There it is. And there it is.
There it is. The, I will say long hair took some getting used to. Okay. Anna's hair on this tour because I liked the buzz, but then I got used to it and I think it looks pretty good. Okay. So there you've heard it all.
I don't know how any of us can follow that.
Yeah, moving on.
Because well, you already know my answer then on who I would like to meet on the survey, right? Okay. More than him passing by and I say, I love you, Adam.
Of many rock band bassists, though, he definitely has, I guess, what's the Rolling Stones, not Charlie Parker, what's his name? Bill Wyman, right, was the bass player. He aged pretty good, too, but, like, definitely the bass player is kind of, like, usually the oddball and, you know, doesn't, I don't know, something about the bass player doesn't fare well in most bands for some reason, is my impression anyways, but he's definitely sort of retained, like you said, that element of cool as he's aged. He's aged really well, like a fine wine of sorts. And so, I guess maybe he started off really, you know, poor in my view with the mullet or the afro, the fro. Yeah. Wasn't like the best way to start. And so he kind of only had up to go from there, but
yeah, I mean, he's definitely just improved his style. He's got a sense of style, you know, and he's just, I always like the way he stands when he plays too. Y'all ever notice that? Like,
yes,
I'm sure Chris, you have.
Oh yeah.
Everybody. Yeah, it's like,
I do.
So cool.
I love him. Uh-huh. He's awesome.
So talk about your bromance, Chris.
It's from a musical perspective, to the surprise and shock of no one. You know, I mean, he's got a pretty individual style. You know, it isn't fancy, but it gets the job done. And his style has evolved, and you know, he's putting little flourishes here and there on the live shows that are, you know, kind of making it his own. He's really and the bass is the heart and soul of the chord. So, you know, without the bass, you don't really have a good foundation. So that's kind of why I gravitate toward Adam.
Yeah, I think for me, watching, just from a musical perspective too, I think the watching them live and seeing how much he actually is doing on some songs where you think he's not really, or maybe on the record he didn't do as much actually or whatever, but live he is actually, you know, putting some stuff in there that you don't notice at first, and you, it's, you know, doesn't, maybe I just have crappy car speakers or whatever too. And so you don't hear it, but yeah. And the fun that he has playing, which after all these many years, like, it sounds like a knock maybe against a bass player, but, like, you know, he, like you said, he doesn't play like with tons of flourish and lots of, you know, notes and stuff, which is kind of like edge too, I guess. But, you know, it would be easy for a musician to get bored playing with or without you as many times, because it's just like, okay, here we go again with the quarter notes or whatever. But he genuinely seems to enjoy it, loves the response it gets from the fans, and, you know, and that kind of thing when he's playing live this many years later. So
yeah, and I love that he smiles so much on stage, especially this tour. You know, he's having fun out there, and you can hear it in his playing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Matt, did you want to chime in with something before we go to the listener comments?
I'm fascinated listening to you guys talk about the musicality of it, because I don't understand any of that, but I know that what songs? Like, I don't know. There's probably, you know, 5 or 10 songs that I guess, I'm talking about the live versions, where the way the song goes, I guess, you know, Streets is one, because Edge just plays, you know, sort of the same consistent stuff over and over throughout most of the song. And that gives Adam a lot of room to, you know, to sort of, I don't know, freelance a little. Chris, is that the right way to describe it?
Kind of improv almost.
A little bit, yeah. And I'm thinking back to when we were at the U2 conference and we had the guys in Unforgettable Fire.
Yeah.
And they were talking about how in, you know, a lot of the songs where Edge seems to play more of the rhythm type stuff, and Adam yeah. has room. And so there's just some mm-hmm. songs where you know, you just all of a sudden you're listening to the song, or I'll be listening to the song in the car and it's the live version of who knows what. And all of a sudden you just hear this do-do-do-do-do-do-do, and it's Adam's bass. I'm like, wow, dang, he sounds so good. And yeah. that was fantastic. You know, it's just, you know, this little flourish for the ads. And so, yeah, I don't know. When I answer our survey, I usually say that I don't have a favorite band member, but I think if you put a gun to my head, and please don't, but if you did, I think I'd probably choose Adam because I just love the way, I think Becky touched on this a little bit as well. I just love the way that he has sort of, I don't know what even to use, the way he's sort of matured over the last 20 years since his more wild days and just sort of grown into this, you know, seems like an absolute gentleman and seems so comfortable in his own shoes and, you know, has just, I don't know. He just, I just really admire what he's been through and where he's gotten to as a person. And so I love that he's, you know, getting involved in the Walk in My Shoes stuff, you know, something that's important to him. I think his story is really fantastic and very admirable.
What do you think on the musical side, Christopher in particular, but anyway, like I was just reading in the Wikipedia thing, so I don't know if this is completely true because, you know, everything on the internet is, of course, flawless, but they said it mentioned that since 1997's Pop Mart tour, Clayton has not sung live in any capacity for the band.
That's true.
Yeah,
that's true. Yeah,
that is true.
And like never having a mic in front of him really, you know, anymore. Does that sort of take away from anything? Not like I don't know, we're not going to like dig on Adam for not singing right. or whatever, but like, yeah.
No, I think it speaks more to his personality too. You know, he's not the boisterous one. He just kind of is there to do his job and have fun doing his job. And he doesn't express himself through his voice. He expresses himself through his bass. And, you know, there's a very melodic quality to his bass playing. And, you know, I think that's all he needs. He doesn't need a mic.
Jeff just asked in the chat, this is a good question. On the 360 tour, when they did Your Blue Room, did Adam do the spoken word part at the end?
I do not remember. And he actually played that in Houston.
I don't remember either.
I do not.
I don't. My gut is that they did not include that in the song. I think the song just sort of faded away without that end part. But I'm not positive on that. They'll have to look that up.
I don't know.
Well, in the once again, going to the reference Wikipedia, I'm just finding random little things here that I don't always believe, but they say he played keyboards on City of Blinding Lights and Iris. I don't recall seeing him ever.
I mean,
maybe.
I mean, he might have done it in the studio, but certainly not live.
Yeah, maybe that mean studio stuff. I can't remember on the album liner if that.
Yeah.
That's anyways. At any rate. Okay, I'll close Wikipedia for now. Did you know that in 2011 he became the ambassador for the Dublin? That's what Adam or Matt was just saying.
The podcast episode where we read Wikipedia to everyone.
Exactly. Have you guys seen this Google thing? Do you know how this thing works? This is crazy. It's like, right? Find out everything. Okay, listener comments. We and along with the hashtag AskIU2, of course, Matt sent out a call, I think it was earlier just today even, of anybody with any sort of comments and things they had to share about Adam and favorite parts of Adam. No, we didn't ask that.
No.
We all know what their favorite parts of Adam are. At U2.com, Sherry once again chimed in. Adam's fond of his bathrobes, as we've seen, and definitely on prior tours we saw a lot of, but even at the end of this tour with at the Paris remake, we saw backstage photos of Adam basically minutes after the show was done. He was already in a bathrobe. Are any of you wearing bathrobes in his honor while recording the podcast? I don't have a bathrobe on right now. I'm clothed, but I don't have a bathrobe.
and thank you for
being. I'm not wearing a bathrobe, but I love that you coined that acronym, Adam's Time to Bathrobe. Because literally, I think it's the first thing after he leaves the stage, somebody gives him a bathrobe and he puts it on.
Like, and that's the thing that, you know, how the classic musician or famous celebrity person who, like, you know, spits out his coffee because it's not the right temperature or whatever. Like, that's the one thing I would guess where Adam would go off, you know, and get really mad at somebody if his bathrobe was not ready after everything else could be, you know, whatever, going crazy. But if his bathrobe isn't right.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. So nobody's bathrobing it tonight?
No.
Nope.
Nope.
I have a hoodie. Nope. That's the closest thing I've got.
Yeah. Some of the listeners in the chat room might be bathrobing it for all we know, I guess. But
before you get to the next comment, in the chat room, we got an answer to the 360 Your Blue Room question, and it's from Goodstuffer 6865, so we don't know who that is. But it says that that part of the song, that spoken word part, was done by the astronomer, Frank. Was it Frank DeWin, I think, was his name?
Yeah, it was on the ISS.
Right, exactly.
Cool. And I remember that now because they made a big deal out of it in Houston when I saw it.
Oh yeah, totally.
Because,
right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So yeah.
Awesome. Yes. Thanks to the chat room. Thanks for 6865 for fixing us on that one.
Right.
Live updates. Yeah. At Care Dubois says mentioned. The quotes, that they are saying, Adam's celebrated quotes is one of their favorite things about Adam Clayton. And one of them they mentioned was, men should not be forced to wear pants when it's not cold, which I fully support and agree with. I don't think he's worn shorts. He's never worn shorts on stage, though, has he? I mean, I shouldn't say never, but like rarely.
Rarely. Yeah.
Not that I've seen.
I can't ever.
Something about a dude in legs, white legs, pasty legs showing isn't very rock star.
Which would pretty much be all of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, true.
Exactly. So, at Bonjour, which I thought was a really clever Twitter handle, my favorite thing said about Adam is how he makes you feel validated and as an equal. He's got such incredible warmth, which I think, Christopher, you were sort of alluding to, of, you know, just the joy that he seems to have while playing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Totally.
And, like, even when Becky, you were mentioning on at U2 party, and just even there, seeing him up close and stuff, and aside from, you know, whatever amount of hyperventilation you were under in that moment, he seems to be having a good time, right?
Yeah.
All of Justin Kent. We had Justin Kent, our friend, did photos for us from that, and he sent, you know, 100 plus photos my way from them on stage, and like Adam is smiling in like 98% of them.
Yeah.
Just
he was having a good time.
Yeah, just they having were, the time of his life.
I think they were pretty much laughing at us because, I mean, the whole group.
I think so, too.
They totally pulled one over on us, and nobody had a clue until they walked in the door that was going to happen. I mean, I think somebody thought it might happen, right? Sherry did.
Yeah.
But, I think just watching them smile and laugh and watching us just completely freaking out. I wonder, you know, at some point, I think I said this in my last OTR, I would really love to know someday what they thought about that moment in time. You know, I would love if they would do a debrief or an interview about it because, you know, maybe we can get them to do it. Who knows? Because it was, they don't do that. Right. And the fact that they sent Adam and Edge was even, you know, even more surprising. Right. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I just, they definitely got us.
Yeah. For anybody who's new to the podcast, you can go back. I'll put a link in the show notes, but you can go back and listen to episode 4 and 5, I think it was, where we sort of debriefed that from our side of the perspective. Yeah. And
did we actually spend two entire podcasts
pretty much
on that?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, we did.
We'll be talking about it for a long time.
It was a big deal. Yeah.
We spent so much time on it that we started like giving each other, you know, financial penalties if we kept talking about it.
Moratoriums.
Well, and for listeners, we actually recorded 6 episodes. I just didn't publish the other 4 where everybody just kept going on and on. I was like, okay, yeah, no, we're recording. We're recording. Yeah, keep talking. Tell me again about Adam coming on the stage. Oh, yeah, that was great. Yeah. All right, moving on. At Stibe said, best with Adam is that he was willing to share his birthday with me. So congratulations. Happy birthday to him.
Happy birthday.
At Stibe. At Stay Safe Tonight says, at my first U2 gig in Paris in December 2015, he looked right into my eyes during Bullet the Blue Sky and Bad. Kindest eye contact ever. Yeah. Which,
good song.
Yeah, and I can't imagine that's a pretty cool show to have as your first U2.
Yeah.
Well, they say first U2 gig in Paris, so I'm assuming it's their first U2 gig, but yeah, very cool. And there's a few more here that are sort of like that. At Turopa, another clever U2 pun kind of Twitter handle, the fact that he makes a genuine effort to interact with the audience during shows is one of my favorite things about him. I'm trying to see.
Yeah, I noticed him doing that a lot at the shows that I was at. If I managed to get out near the E stage, you know, during the middle of the show, he was always just looking and making gestures and contact with the folks up front, which was very cool to see.
And at U2Com, Sherry is in here.
Oh gosh, she mentioned the party that should not be mentioned. Yeah.
Just that time he showed up at a birthday party I was throwing. That was cool. And U2 History mentioned Pink Adam is my favorite and sent a link to what is that? At U2 History Twitter, or picture on Twitter. Sorry, my words are failing me for some reason as I try to digest this pink photo of Adam. Anyways, and one thing that a couple of people mentioned that we are going to chat about is the idea, the sort of story that came of the threat to Bono's life if Pride was played in Arizona and Adam standing in front of Bono during that, especially the poignant line of, you know, shots ring out. I know Matt, you were sort of debating a bit with Tim on Twitter as to the validity of it. It certainly makes for a good story, but is this... I didn't see it on Wikipedia. Is it a true story, or what are we?
If it's not on Wikipedia, then it never happened.
Exactly.
So we can put that to rest right now. No, it's right. I mean, that's one of the, you know, the well known stories that's come down through the years, and Bono talked about it in the official book U2 by U2. And when I was writing U2 a Diary way back in 2007, 2008, and then working on the update 2010 or so, I was trying to find out when, you know, which show, when did this happen, et cetera, et cetera. And I was never able to get any definitive information about it because, you know, there's part of the one version of the story is that it happened in Arizona at the beginning of the Joshua Tree tour, but then, there are earlier interviews where Bono says that it happened on the Unforgettable Fire tour. And so this kind of I just remember when I was researching the book, that happened a lot where a story would change as it gets told over time. And so it made, you know, verifying some facts very difficult. But the Arizona Republic published an article, I think, in 2010, where their reporter tried to dig into it, and there was no police record reporting a threat or anything like that. The FBI didn't have any knowledge of a threat. Barry Fay, the concert promoter, didn't remember any extra security. So that kind of if it happened, that means, you know, it must have happened on the Unforgettable Fire tour. And so anyway, it's. You know, whether or not it's, I mean, I don't disbelieve Bono. It sounds like, you know, he originally said it happened on Unforgettable Fire tour and then it became the Joshua Tree tour, but it seems like it probably was the Unforgettable Fire tour. So I don't know. I think it's, I totally believe that it's the kind of thing he would do. And I think it's, you know, just speaks to the relationship that those two have. And remember, wasn't Adam his best man at the wedding?
Yes, he was.
In 82, Bono and Ally got married. So, yeah, I don't disbelieve that it happened. It's just, you know, there's some debate over, I guess, when it happened.
Right. And that's where it's kind of like it's become its own little song lyric that can change from time to time or whatever, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
The truth is there, but you can kind of flex with whatever the mood it might be. So, at Weird Food mentions Adam's bass line in New Year's Day. Remember watching the video for that song and falling in love with that bass line, which is definitely, one of the most distinguishable, not the most, I guess, but up there anyways. I don't know if they've Rolling Stone has ever had a most distinguished bass lines in the world or whatever in the history of rock and roll. But
so why don't we ask, so since Chris is our musician expert here, what are Adam's best bass lines? I mean, obviously, you know, New Year's Day is an obvious one.
Yeah. Well,
and I, you go know, ahead.
A lot of it depends on the criteria, because best, I mean, best as most recognizable, best, you know, hardest to play, best, you know, most popular, or hard to say. I mean, I like a lot of his bass lines for a lot of different reasons. You know, the more they move for me, the better it is. So lines like the one in Mysterious Ways, or This Is Where You Can Reach Me Now, or Breathe are some of my favorites. And Bad for me is his best. Mm-hmm. Because it's very, it's almost dub like, what he does in that one. It's very improvisatory. And it's perfect for that song, I think.
Yeah.
I agree with him.
So Breathe, I'll have to listen to Breathe again. I don't recall thinking, and listening for Adam's bass in that song. I love his bass on Stateless from, the Million Dollar Hotel soundtrack. Especially at the end of the song, you know, like the last minute or two when they're just all four of them are, and the song sort of, you know, takes off. I love his bass line in that song.
I need to listen to that again.
Yeah. He had some, I remember that song too. And I think it, from a bass player's perspective, I think it takes like restraint to play as well as he does in a weird way. Like,
yeah.
Just like a good, especially guitar players kind of get the knock of being like, you know, wanting to noodle and play tons of notes or whatever, but equally so bass players. Like when I play guitar with a lot of bass players, they're either like completely lazy where they only want to play like one note per measure and how dare you ask them to move up the fretboard, or they're like all over the map and filling in every little space with some little fill. And Adam has that perfect blend of like being able to step back when he needs to let edge or even the lyric sort of ring out, but he knows how to fill the right moments, I think. And so, very cool.
Cool.
Very cool guy.
Well, and Adam jokes a lot about, well, if you just know four chords, you can pretty much do anything. He said it like it's not that hard, even though he started out not knowing how to play anything and, learned how to play the bass.
We got a couple of suggestions here in the chat room there. Stand-up comedy. That's a great bass line. That was one of the underrated songs.
Yeah.
Of that album, I think stand-up comedy would work on this tour. I think the arrangement suits what they're trying to do on this Innocence Experience tour. I was a fan of stand-up comedy. I thought they got overlooked.
Yeah, and some days are better than others. Or actually, is the I'm ever able to grab the bass player's bass to jam for a bit or whatever, that's the line I go to all the time, because it's
a great one. Yeah,
it's so fun to play, and but it's not like. Nobody would recognize it as a U2. Like, I mean, if you play with or without you, everyone's like, oh, yes, the U2 song.
Right, right.
But that one is like so just different and out there. It doesn't feel like a U2 song traditionally or whatever. And
yeah. It's weird. Yeah, it's good.
But I will say, are you done, Chris?
Yeah, please go ahead.
I do love the bass in With or Without. I have to say that is one of the songs that I really identify with. The first thing I think about on that song actually is the bass. So it might be well known, but it's excellent in my mind.
And not just the abs on the bass player while he's playing.
I am never going to live that down, but I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that.
We better keep moving if we're going to get through folks here. At HJ Wallace one said, this pic I took of him in Seattle, June 2011. He's genuinely so happy and excited to connect with us, which again is another just picture. We'll link to it, of course, from Heather, but Adam just hands in the air celebrating kind of the moment on stage. And yeah, like many people have said, very happy to be on stage. Fabiano mentions, as we said earlier at the top of the show, favorite memory is at Lollapalooza in Sao Paulo, Brazil. Adam was without a bodyguard and no one recognizes him, but I did. And very cool photo of Fabiano standing, I guess, next to Adam, presumably at the show or a post show. have to have Fabiano sometime to discuss his meetings with very cool. Again, links to these will be in the show notes, so you can find them, goodstuff.fm/ATU2/26, and you'll be able to see the photos and stuff that we're linking to. People are talking about, there's the whole chain, the whole thread actually from Matt's original question through the At U2 account. You can go through and read them later, obviously, if you want to. At U2S, Jersey Girl said, my favorite thing about Adam Clayton is that he's just cool. He's the posh of U2 and a big flirt. So there you go.
True.
Is he, would he be, I guess he probably is more so than any of the other, like Bono would be, to me, the most overt, like flirty guy of the band. But
Bono is the guy that makes everyone comfortable, right? It's like you feel like you're talking to your best friend when you talk to him or meet him. I think he just puts people at ease because he's so charismatic.
Bono is the guy with all eyes on him, but Adam's the one at the end of the bar just smiling into his drink and letting the people come to him.
Right.
That's a good way of putting it.
I love the next one. It's from Vid. She's Mysterious Vid, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. His,
and no, we are not
objective. Go ahead, Chris. You read this one.
His eyes, his smile, t-shirts, abs, and butts. And no, we're not objectifying him.
No, of course there not. We would never.
That was great. That.
I probably needed to have a little bit more breathiness to that reading, but
you did, yeah. You could have,
I didn't have a picture of him in front of me to, emote to. At Mrs. Mullen Jr. said the Adam Clayton video of him driving around the south of France is especially endearing. I didn't dig up a link to this. Is this something that I don't recall seeing?
This is I think it's the one right before the Paris. So before the terrorist attack. Yes. I think it was it before the terrorists or was it when they returned to Paris? I'm not sure which, if it was before the first two or before 3 and 4, but anyway, yeah, he did this wonderful, 3 or 4 or 5 minute video driving around Paris and just, talking about, the shows and just, it was very, it was very cool.
Yeah. I remember seeing that now. Yeah. It was, I think it was a Facebook Live thing or something.
I think you're right.
Yeah. Yeah, well, so I'll try and dig up a link to that, but facebook.com/U2, I think, and you can probably find it there too. But, and at @highway_girl said driving with Adam, he is coolness itself. So I don't know if she has an experience actually driving, or maybe she's referring to the definitely better than driving with Bono from what we hear, but, maybe we'll have to follow up with Highway Girl on that one.
Probably not to do. Based on his reputation.
Yeah.
Fun, I was
And at Jeff Valance mentioned the bass line in New Year's Day, which of course is great bass line. And Richard Call mentioned, how about November 26, 1993 in Sydney, Glad They Weathered the Storm, which is, I don't know if anybody wants to cover or touch on that a bit, I guess, but basically the story goes anyways that he was too drunk in sorts to show up for the recording or the concert, sorry. And Stu, what's bass, their guitar tech and bass tech had to fill in for them that night, which is kind of like the one and only time that's kind of happened. And reportedly since then has been alcohol free and, kind of like turned his life around after that moment, and famously documented in the book that Matt and I can never remember the name of when we need to.
U2 at the End of the World.
There you go. Thank you.
Yep, that's where it was.
I wasn't just faking it. I really could remember.
And, they did. They were pretty pissed off, and they did an intervention with him after that, and they're like, dude, So I think, thank goodness, right? Because he's such an amazing talent, and I'm glad that he made it through that, and that now he's known for drinking his tea and wearing bathrobes and loving art and his beautiful Brazilian wife. It's all good. So,
yeah.
Definitely. Anyway,
but it is one of those things. Like for a rock band, it's not that surprising to have substance abuse issues and all that kind of stuff around a band. U2, infamously or famously or whatever, hasn't struggled with that to the same degree that other bands do, but and the one time they really did, you know, it kind of was like, it's not this off again, on again kind of thing that happened after that. It seems to be like a testament to Adam's, you know, ability to just turn off that, and who knows what all was involved, obviously, you know, in the days and months and years even after that. Not saying he just, you know, it was easy for him by any means, but just the ability he had to recognize the severity of what was going on and the fact that he missed out on this show with his, you know, three mates and turn his life around after that is, yeah, really impressive to me. So
like I was saying earlier, I love that aspect of his personal story and his personal journey that he, you know, went from there to where he is now. I think it's, you know, it's, I love that about him.
Yeah. And we'll end maybe, at Bjorn Laud mentioned on Twitter, my wife made me wear an ugly rain poncho. Made me wear an ugly rain poncho during the 360 tour in Dublin. Adam sees me, jump up and down, and visibly stifles a laugh. Still married to the wife, but never listening to her again for concert outfits. So, very cool.
I can totally picture Adam. You can just see Adam looking at this guy jumping up and down in a in a funny looking rain poncho and just.
I feel like, sorry.
What are you doing out there?
Right. Yeah.
And finally, at Peace Love U2, mentioned my favorite Adam Clayton memory is this Anton Corbin pic, which is a great sort of close-up shot of Adam, which I've never, maybe it's cropped. I don't know if that's the original photo or not. I'll assume it is, but I'd never seen that look anyways from Adam. It's a cool photo. Becky, do you have that one somewhere on your wall? Or?
No, I need to look at it. Give me a second. I'm going because, you know, and if anyone out there has the ab picture, please send it to me.
Oh my gosh, here we go.
I'm just saying. Just,
here we go.
We'll be friends for life. Who took the pictures? I can't remember, and I'm sure I didn't save them anywhere, but oh wow, that's a cool picture actually.
Yeah, it's neat. It's neat sort of look.
I like that. Yeah.
So thank you, folks, for sending in your comments and memories. And you know, it's not like he died. We're celebrating his birthday, not like memories.
No, it's happy birthday. It's happy birthday, Adam.
Yeah,
that's right. Happy birthday.
Exactly. Yeah, and we will. Any closing thoughts? I guess before we wrap up the episode on the Adam episode, is that a thing?
I thought that was awesome. I'm glad we have to give credit to Sherry. I think this wasn't this her idea?
It was, yeah. And then we didn't even let her come on. So we'll give her
I'm sorry.
She'll do the Larry tribute episode, yes, for sure.
Yeah, there you go.
We'll put Sherry into Sula on that one.
I think we'll just let them run with that one. And just post, they can post it right to the podcast. No need to edit.
No. Trust me, there'll be a lot of need to edit that one.
True. All right. Well, thanks, Christopher and Becky and Matt, for joining me in this fun discussion of Adam. And happy birthday, Mr. Clayton, if you ever happen to somehow listen to this. What's coming up in the At U2 world is there's still the worldwide U2 fan survey that you can fill out. So the link will be in the show notes, but if you go to atu2.com, I'm sure it's fairly easy to find. Matt, any updates on where the fan survey is at last you looked?
I looked a couple nights ago and we were at almost 2,600 replies, which is really fantastic. Still very heavily weighted towards gentlemen replying as opposed to ladies. So I'm just mystified by that. So
hey,
I don't know.
I have a bunch of women working on them and filling them out through. I'm on some groups that are about Bono and it's girls, it's women. So I told them you got to go fill it out. We need women. So continue to spread the word, right?
Awesome. Yep.
Okay. So we won't go down that rabbit trail too much. That you just mentioned sort of casually that there's groups on the internet discussing Bono, which I'm not, I'm not
Facebook thing.
Yeah. I'm not mocking anything. Like, we're on a podcast discussing you too. There's nothing, we're not like, you know, there's
yeah, we've
you
got
can't
no
be nerdier.
Talk.
Yeah. So I'm just
true. Just I don't know who would do that, right? Yeah.
Well, Becky, why don't you, if somebody wanted to get a hold of you and let you know about ab pictures or otherwise, what's your Twitter handle that you know, they can reach you at?
It's at B Myers, and it's MYERS.
All right. And how about you, Christopher?
At CJSENDRINAL. That's CJS Endrinal.
Awesome. And Matt, how about you?
At Matt McGee.
All right.
Easy as it gets.
Well, mine's easier even. iChris is
it
very
is.
Tiny.
I love that you're iChris. I think that's the coolest name.
And the U2 account, well, U2, is the band is U2, obviously, but the at U2 account is twitter.com/ATU2. As I mentioned before, the hashtag you can use on there is AskAtU2, and we'll follow that and find it and use this. Any comments you have for a future episode? I can't remember when birthdays are here. We don't start sending in Larry and Bono and Edge stuff quite yet. We'll put out a call when we're ready to discuss those. But and on Facebook, facebook.com/ATU2.com is where you can follow or like us on there as well, and maybe have follow-up comments and things you want to throw in there on the Facebook wall, Adam memories and thoughts and favorite bass lines and things like that that you'd like to add that we maybe forgot about. We would love to hear it and continue this discussion there. You can find any links and things to all the stuff that we discussed, pictures, all that kind of stuff. goodstuff.fm/ATU2/26 is where you can find this episode. While you're there, you can follow the link to the iTunes store if you don't already do so, and you can subscribe in iTunes and also leave a quick rating or review while you're there, which really helps get the word out about the podcast to maybe other U2 fans that aren't aware of the fun you can have discussing.
Okay, on a parting notes at Europa, thank you very much for the tweet and the video, the gif of Adam. Oh my God.
Oh my gosh. Becky's having a moment, I think.
Right, better end the show.
That's hilarious. Thank you.
I'll go find the link that Becky's talking
about. Dude, it's awesome. I'll send it to you. You just don't
family expect show.
And on that note.
On that note, thank you for listening. Hope you have a great day. Bye.